97.5, The Fanatic.
Imagine that, Tyler. The Philadelphia 76ers won a basketball game at home. At home. How about it?
They've only done that once or twice this year.
Sixers win 118-111. You are in the post.
It is not Devon Givens as it normally is. It's Patty again, Tyler Zuli. We're here till midnight discussing the Sixers win. As I said, they won 118-111 against a very bad Chicago Bulls team. Stop me if you've heard this one before. As I need to mute my phone. Stop me if you've heard this before. The third quarter wasn't kind to the Sixers.
No, it wasn't. And I think that the Sixers, you know, we talked about it a little bit earlier today. Rob Motti was talking about why does Giannis Antetokounmpo only play like 31 minutes a game? And I said the difference between the Bulls and the Sixers is, or excuse me, the Bucks and the Sixers is the Bucks put teams away. The Bucks put teams away early and they don't come back. The Sixers don't do that yet, but... listen, I know that the third quarter wasn't good tonight. They lose the third quarter 28-23, but they win the fourth quarter 35-28 after they win the first quarter 38-25. And to me, I don't have any complaints. Listen, it wasn't as rocking chair as we wanted it to be. You know, being the Chicago Bulls 19-35, but that's a sneaky good team. You know, the record is not indicative of the talent I think that they have, and they were missing a lot of their guys. I know it was only a 7-point win, but I don't have a lot of complaints tonight.
I have some complaints.
Do you?
Oh, yeah. Oh.
What bugged you about
it? Big complaints.
Third quarter still?
Third quarter drives me nuts. The third quarter with this team is horrendously bad. I, to this day, would love to be a fly in the wall when they walk in at halftime because every single game they come out flat in the third quarter. I don't know what Brett Brown's telling these guys. I don't know what it is, but you can bet the house on it that next game, third quarter, they are going to struggle. And it happens every game, no matter if they're playing Chicago, no matter if they're playing Milwaukee, no matter if they're playing me, you, and Dylan McKinnon and two other schlups. They suck in the third quarter. That's troubling to me. The fact that Al Horford played 30 minutes and had 0 points is troubling to me. The fact that Al Horford was signed to a massive contract and has struggled in his role this season is troubling to me. And the fact that they didn't play Alec Burks. Like, what? Yeah, Brett Brown said, tell me what you told me before the game.
Well, so...
What exactly was the reasoning?
So he spoke with... obviously spoke with Tom before the game started in his, coach's corner. And basically what I got out of it was... You know, we're looking at physicals and we're looking at medical and they may play, they may not. He said we'll see. Obviously, Glenn Robinson the third played 12 minutes. Alec Burks did not play at all. I don't know if these guys were delivered via Oregon Trail.
Dude, they took the same route that Corey Dickerson took to get to the Phillies.
I
traded for Corey Dickerson, and 4 days later he showed up.
I don't know if they were brought here by wagon, like covered wagon, Oklahoma Sooner style, but they took way too long to get here. Now, Glenn Robinson played well. I mean, he was 5 of 6 from the field. He was a plus 11. He had 10 points.
Yeah, he was good tonight, but...
I need to see Burks on the court.
It's ridiculous. You made a trade... to get two guys in here to fortify your bench that desperately needs help, and you don't play one of them? And they both were coming from the same team. It wasn't like one was coming from one team, one was coming from the other, because in that situation, maybe you can accept of why one didn't play. To not play Alec Burks at all is absurd. I mean, when the trade was announced, he was the one I was more excited about. He's averaging 16 points this season, and I'm happy about the trade in general. Because I think there was a much needed boost to your bench. We've talked about it all season. The bench is terrible. But to not play him at all, that was a head-scratching move to me. Now, being a little doom and gloom here, they did win the game 118-111, but most of it was on the back of Furkan Korkmaz, who went off again for the second straight game. Second straight game of 30 points or more. This one he scored 31 in 32 minutes. He was dialed in tonight. I wonder how sustainable this is. How sustainable is the Furkan Korkmaz we're seeing today? And how sustainable is the Furkan Korkmaz that we've seen way too many times where he goes 1 from 11 from the three-point range, he plays 20 to 25 minutes, and he picks up about 8 points?
Well, listen, here's the thing with Furkan Korkmaz, and I need people to understand this, because every time Furkan Korkmaz has a big game like he had the, you know, tonight and on Friday night against the Grizzlies, Furkan Korkmaz is very, very, very acceptable in his role as the spot down shooter off the bench. You know, come across come through the pin down, get past the screen, take the shot on the move, knock the three down. There's going to be nights where he is 7 of 8 from beyond the arc, like he was tonight. Or I made that number up. Let me take a look real quick just to double check. He was 6 of 11 from beyond the arc. There's going to be nights where he shoots like that and he picks up 30 points. There's going to be nights where he is 1 of 9 from the field and he scores 9 points. The problem is, guys that play like that inconsistently should not be getting 32 minutes on their down nights. So I need to know that when Korkmaz plays well and he scores 31 points, he's going to get 32 minutes. I need to also know that when Korkmaz plays poorly, he's going to be getting 17 minutes.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe the fact that he was so dialed in tonight is one of the reasons why you didn't see Alec Burks play. My argument with that would be Shake Milton played 13 minutes. When they made the trade, Alec Burks takes over Shake Milton's minutes, and Shake Milton then becomes a guy who, if you're blowing out a team, which they have trouble doing, that's when Shake Milton comes in. Now, he starts this game. Josh Richardson comes off the bench. He gives you 19 minutes. That was another head-scratching move to me, was why even play Josh Richardson before the All-Star break?
Not only Richardson, I'm surprised. The Sixers are in such a tight bind that I'm surprised that, quite honestly, that Joel Embiid's playing. If they were 30, so they're 33 and 21. Let me ask you, if they were 37 and 17, would Joel Embiid still be inactive?
Yeah, probably.
That's where they're at. That's where the situation is, where they win a game against the Chicago Bulls. They improve to 24 and 2 at home, but you need Joel Embiid, who's probably still not 100%, to play 31 minutes and score 28 points.
There's no way, and that's one of the reasons why I don't think Joel Embiid should play in the All-Star game. I don't. And now it's probably his decision, and you know, it's a good look for the team to have an All-Star, you know, out there starting and all that crap, but no, I mean, the reality is, if you're trying to make a push, which is what they say that they are, even though I don't think they're good enough, you don't want your often injured all-star center, and really the key to this whole thing, playing meaningless games. And I will probably have the same conversation about Joel Embiid every single year where the all-star game comes around, where I will sit there and go, it's great, he's going to the all-star, he shouldn't play. He shouldn't play. And I'm back saying he shouldn't play, because you're right, I don't think he's 100%. I don't think there's any way he's 100%. But they need him.
I got to tell you,
he's out there playing.
I don't have an issue with him playing. And the reason I don't have an issue with him playing is because when you watch an NBA All-Star game, you know exactly what you're getting. There's no lateral movement. There's no hard picks. There's really no defense. Let's be honest. There's no defense in the All-Star game. So to me, I don't think that he is wagering much by going out there and playing in the All-Star game, playing 12 minutes.
Yeah, but a guy like that gets injured with a stiff gust of wind.
And I get that, but...
like, literally, I mean, do you remember the conversations we would have when he first started playing, where it was like, he needs to learn how to fall properly? He needs to learn how to jump and land properly? I mean, that was... so, when I look at it, yeah, okay. 9 times out of 10, actually 99 out of 100 times, to up the odds, nothing will happen.
Yes.
Nothing.
You're still afraid of that
1%. But I'm still
chance.
Afraid of that 1%.
See,
where I'm like, it's not worth it. It's
I've
not worth the risk.
I've moved past that. I've moved past the 1%. I think I'm more towards like 0.25%, like a quarter of a percent.
It, to me, the juice just
and that's
worth
just not
juice.
Enough.
It's to me, it's a meaningless game that nobody watches, nobody cares about.
You know what really?
Other than like degenerate gamblers.
Quite honestly, at this point, and I don't know how you feel about it, because I think All-Star games are stupid as a whole.
Yeah, I agree.
Put it to the end of the season. Because at this point, I do not care about the All-Star game, whether you play it in February or whether you play it, you know, a week after the NBA Finals are played. Because no one cared about the Pro Bowl when it was after the Super Bowl. No one cares about the Pro Bowl when it's in the week between the Super Bowl. So what is the difference of just playing this at the end of the season and effectively just letting things go? So just let the All-Star game go. Let the All-Star game go. Let them play, but you got to do it at the end of the game, or at the end of the season, I should say.
Yeah, I'd be fine with that. I'd be fine with that because the reality is I'm not going to watch anyway.
Right. So what I'm saying is,
so you're right. Make it towards the end of the season where the meaningful games are out of the way, and then we can sit here and maybe enjoy. If you want one last push of basketball, you can get it.
But they're not going to. So on the flip side, they're not going to change it. So for me, the defense is so inept in an All-Star game that I don't see Joel Embiid hurting himself playing 12 minutes when he's probably going to be playing as a shooter. He's probably going to be out on the perimeter, you know, because the big guys like to launch threes in the All-Star game. You know, he'll be covering Rudy Gobert. He'll be covering whomever.
I said, it's the 1% that bothers me. What I would love if they would do, and this is something that the NHL does, is they give all the teams a week off. They literally call it the bye week.
Well, I mean, they have quite some time.
As the NHL. And you're right.
The Sixers play Tuesday, which is the 11th.
And then they don't play for a while.
And then they don't play until the
20th. But I'm saying, for your hypothetical situation, if you push the All-Star game back, you can still have a bye week. You can still do that. You can still give these guys a week off, you know, and you pick a time frame and boom, and you're good. Because I think they do need a break. I think they're pro athletes. It's a demanding season. But it worries me that your often injured center, who is, in my opinion, not playing at 100%, but you need now, because you need him to win games, is out there, and he's going to not get a break, but play yet another game, albeit an exhibition where you're right, no defense is played. But it just bothers me. And
yeah, I know it does. And I'm going to spend the next 3 hours trying to swing you into this game means nothing.
No, you think the All-Star game means something?
No, it means nothing. What I'm saying is I don't have an issue with him playing. As long as he is not going to, on February 20th, when I think they play the Brooklyn Nets, I want to say. When they play the Brooklyn Nets, have him be limited or injured. So
How it happened last season?
Right.
Like when he came out of the All-Star break and he missed a bunch of time with knee inflammation and he never should have played in that game?
But the difference is he wasn't healthy going into the All-Star game last year.
He's not healthy now.
He is more healthy this year.
But think about that. He's more healthy now than he was last year, but he's not healthy. He's just not healthy. If he's not healthy, why is he playing a meaningless game?
Give him a percentage. Last year, he was probably at 60%. This year, he's probably
75?
I would say he's probably closer to 80, 85.
See, this is where Dylan's got to hit the 69% drop. That's where he has to hit the drop. But he's not, because he's falling asleep. He's watching Laura Dern, you know, except the Oscar, and he's not hitting the 69% drop.
Kiss my ass.
I'm disappointed in him.
That's a better drop anyway. I agree with him.
Well, you know, look, you got to call these guys on the carpet. You know?
You don't want to make an enemy out of me.
Imagining Stephen A. Smith having an argument with Dylan McKinnon. Highlight of my day right there. 610-632-0975. You're in the post with Pat Egan and Tyler Zuli. We're here till midnight. Dylan McKinnon is producing while watching the Oscars. The phone number is 610-632-0975. Sixers did beat the Bulls 118-111 tonight down at the Wells Fargo Center. Joel Embiid had 30. He didn't have 30 points. He had 28 points, but the Sixers were actually led by Furkan Korkmaz. This one who had 31. So we'll talk about the performances, the trade deadline. Maybe we'll mix in some XFL. Who knows? Who knows if we'll have enough time on that? But the Sixers, look, they looked good tonight for a time, third quarter excluded.
You got to take the win as you can get it. You have to win these games.
I need to discuss, though, if this team is actually a contender or if we're convincing ourselves.
Because, Pat, here's the thing. Before we head to the break real quick, if they would have lost this game, both of us would be up in arms. So the fact that they won this game, I have to let this one slide.
And that's the most frustrating part about the Philadelphia 76ers this season is because you're right. They lose this game, we're up in arms. And we're up in arms because we've seen them lose to inferior opponents so many times this season that it wouldn't be surprising. Nothing is surprising with this team. You know, if they go out on February 11th and they blow out the LA Clippers, no one's surprised. No one.
I don't.
But then if they follow that up and they lose to the Brooklyn Nets, and let's say Kyrie's out, no one will be surprised there. I mean, it's the Christmas Day game all over again where they beat the Bucks, and we sat here and said, you know, it wouldn't surprise either of us if they lost to Orlando. They went out and lost to Orlando. I mean, they come off a road trip where you lose all four games to teams, you know, that are good. But come on, Atlanta. Like, you should beat Atlanta. Boston, we all chalked up to, ah, don't worry about Boston. Don't worry. Hey, 3-4 is good. Like, you don't need that win. You get blown out and embarrassed by Miami, and then you get blown out by Milwaukee, and you come back and win, you know, against Memphis and against Chicago. So, this team is so Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, and I want to get your opinion on it and the callers as well. The trade deadline's over. Now we're in the veteran buyout period. You hope that they will add somebody. Kyle O'Quinn is basically the reserve body to get released if they do add somebody. I'm wondering, is this team a legit contender? Because I don't see it. 610-632-0975. It's Pat Egan, Tyler Zulian, 97.5 The Fanatic.
No, 69%.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Man, I don't know what you did to piss off Rob in Doylestown, who didn't feel like waiting, because apparently he was so mad.
Call back, because I don't know.
Man, he wanted to go in on you. Now, there's a chance that he thought that
you were I and
yeah,
I were you.
It was flipped, because you're being the optimist, I'm being the pessimist here, but that's kind of the on brand for the show.
Here's the thing. I said I was optimistic. I don't think I'm optimistic. I think I'm in acceptance at this point.
Like, I'm just disappointed.
I know what this team is. I know what this team's shortcomings are. I know what this team's strengths are. And I think at this point, you and I can pinpoint when they're going to lose a game they shouldn't and when they're going to win a game they probably don't deserve. They are going to beat the Clippers on Tuesday.
They will beat the Lakers. Well, actually, they might not because it's on the road. But I was going to say, they would beat the Lakers and then they would lose to Sacramento. Like, that's the kind of hit or miss team that they have. Is it's just they tend to play down a lot of times their opponents, and then they'll win against Chicago. I mean, the third quarter, I can't get over the third quarter woes. I can't get over it because it doesn't get mentioned enough. Like, what the hell is Brett Brown doing?
Well, and that's
at halftime, your team comes out flat, not just once, twice, every game. The third quarter, they struggle. I don't get it. Like, you're not going to win jack squat if every single time you come out there in the third quarter, you lose. And it doesn't matter who they're playing. Just third quarter flat every time.
You know, like I said, I've got this sick, sadistic sense that they're going to beat the Clippers to finish off the first unofficial first half of the season. My problem is, you just mentioned that third quarter, they've been horrible almost every third quarter this season. If they lose a third quarter to the LA Clippers, they are not
done.
Coming back.
They're done.
There is no chance to come
if
back.
The Sixers are losing at halftime. They're losing the game because they're going to end up going in the third quarter flat, and usually they end up getting smoked. And then they've dug themselves such a hole where you can't get out of it. And just looking really quick, the last couple games, the only game that I can find, I'm at the Boston game, the only game I can find where they actually won the third quarter was against Memphis. And other than that, it's exactly what we're talking about. It's struggling, no matter if it's a good team or a bad team, including the Golden State Warriors. They lost the third quarter. I mean, I can't get over this. Look, here's the facts about the Sixers, and it pains me to say it, but there were such high expectations for the team, and they are a mediocre basketball team that is horrendously coached, and nothing is going to fix that.
They're not a mediocre basketball team. They're a good basketball team. But the problem is, unlike most leagues,
I don't know, they're fifth in the East. That's not good.
I think it is. Because
I don't at all.
I think if you're top third, they are a top third team based on record. And even if you took the top five and top five.
East, though.
That's what I want to get to. Is unlike other leagues, when you look at the NFL, I think all playoff teams are good teams because it's only 16 games.
Agreed.
When you look at the MLB, for the most part, because of the fact that there's only four or five playoff teams, most playoff teams are good teams. When you look at the NBA, it is historic in the sense that there are great teams, and then there are a lot of good teams. So what I mean by that is there are a lot of really, there are a lot of good to really good NBA teams right now. But when you look at the landscape of the NBA, how many of these teams do you think that are in a playoff spot are legitimate title contenders?
Milwaukee.
Right.
Both LA teams.
Toronto is a legitimate title contender.
I say Boston over Toronto.
I think Toronto has figured things out. But my point being is, legitimate title contenders don't lose to good teams in the NBA. Legitimate title contenders lose to eight seeds in the NHL. You see it all the time. Legitimate title contenders lose to wild card teams in the MLB. You see it all the time. Legitimate title contenders lose to six seeds. The Tennessee Titans just knocked off the best team in football last year, 3 weeks ago. You know, you generally do not see legitimate title contenders lose to good teams in the NBA.
Yeah, and
so the Sixers are a good team.
Well, all right, good, mediocre, whatever. I mean, I look at being in the middle of the pack in the East as a mediocre team because you're a playoff team. You're basically, you're right where you didn't want to be when you started the process. You didn't want to be the fifth seed, the sixth seed, the seventh seed. You didn't want to be that.
No, you were a top two team. You had aspirations of top two seed.
You have no shot of winning an NBA championship as the fifth seed. None. You have no shot of winning as the four seed. You're done. You're done. Maybe the three seed, maybe. But here's my problem with the Sixers is we keep backing up the goalpost for this team. And for years, I would hear about the Flyers. And the Flyers fans. How many times throughout the last 5 years would you hear Flyers fans say, oh, they're only 3 points out of a playoff spot. They're only 5 points out. And that is, and it was frustrating because you would sit there and you'd wring your hands and go, dude, they're not a playoff team. Like, they don't have a goalie. Now, they finally have a goalie in Carter Hart. But when you look at the Sixers, we kept backing up the goalpost and saying, well, they're only three games out of the number two seed. And then you go, ah, well, they're only four games out. And a week later, ah, they're only five games out. And now we're sitting here, and I got to do quick math, which I'm not good at. You're 6.5 games out. And you know what's going to happen in about a week? You're probably going to be 7 and 7.5 games out. But we keep backing up the goalposts to convince ourselves that our proclamation at the beginning of the year, that our proclamation that they would walk to the finals, I made it myself, is still alive. And the fact is, this team is a mediocre, average, okay, whatever you want to call them, they're not a championship team.
No, they're not.
And they made a move at the deadline to go get Alec Burks, Glenn Robinson III. I like the move. It's going to help. It was something they needed to do. But unless something drastic happens, nothing's changing. They might squeak into the four seed, but that's it.
Well, and that's what I kind of want to get at and ask you this. They're five games back of the Boston Celtics. If they were to be a four seed, my confidence level doesn't change because they just flip with Miami and they get the home court. And maybe they win the first round. If they get to the three seed, does your confidence go up at all?
I mean, dude, get to the three seed.
It's five games.
It's like saying, like, hey, Pat, if you're 5'8", well, guess what? I'm not going to be. I'm 5'3". So,
listen, it's five games.
But, like, tell me a situation where they win five games and Boston loses five games.
You got to take a look at the trend that's happened.
I don't even need to look at this. With the trend that's happened with the Sixers, they're going to go on the road and they're going to lose, and they're going to come home and they're going to win. We have yet to see them rattle off 6, 7, 8, 9 games in a row. It hasn't happened.
I
think they've had is a 4-game winning streak.
Correct. I would venture a guess, however, though, that the Boston Celtics the Boston Celtics back half is tougher than what the Sixers have. The Celtics have five road games in the next six games. They go to Houston. The Clippers come to Boston. Then they go to Minnesota, L.A. to play the Lakers, Portland, Utah. They have to play Houston again. They've got Utah again. They've got the Bucks twice. They've got the Pacers twice. They've got Brooklyn twice. They've got Toronto twice. I don't know if their schedule is nearly as difficult or nearly as easy as the Sixers is. Just off the top of my head, I think that you could make up five games there and get into a three seed. It's not going to be on the Celtics losing games. Look, it's going to be on the Sixers not losing. It's going to be indicative on the Sixers not losing to Atlanta and not losing to Charlotte.
And that's the problem is, you know, you hear the fact that they have one of the easiest schedules coming up in the second half, and you go, oh, that's great. You know, and yeah, okay, there's a reason why they could sneak into the three seed, maybe sneak into possibly the two seed if all things go right, right? But then you go, oh, wait, they lose a lot of games to bad teams. They play down to their opponents all the time. So this isn't a situation where this is a normal team. I keep going back to the beginning of the season and how the season started. And it's been that was the perfect precursor to how this season was going to go. They rattle off 5 straight wins, including, by the way, 3 on the road, which was like, whoa. I mean, we look back on it and go, how the hell did they do that? But then they rattled off 3 straight losses. And you go from 5-0 to 5-3. And we sat there and went, ah, okay, all right, we know it's a road trip, whatever. They're out west. You know, things can happen. And then it's 2 games in a row. And then it's 2 straight losses. And like, that is exactly how this season has gone, which is they look like a really good team one night, and then they play down to their opponent, look like a bad team the next. And you need a little bit of consistency to win the playoffs, and right now I don't see how the hell they get that. 610-632-0975. It is Patty Egan, Tyler Zuli in the post on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
I can't take it. We're getting Pixar hate left and right from you and Dylan.
Listen,
over here.
I don't need existential crisis out of my children's movie.
Look, I mean, if this isn't a movie show, so we can't get into it. But it's ridiculous. I got Dylan McKinnon over there hating on Pixar.
Well, you want me to?
Siskel and Ebert.
Here's
over there.
The problem. When we go to the next break, I'll tell you.
Hating on Pixar sequels, not Pixar.
Well, yeah. When we go to our next break, I'll tell you the movie that I hate more than anything from Disney Pixar. That you're probably going to want to kick me out of the studio for.
I mean, I just kicked Dylan out.
Well, I'll just follow suit.
He's banned for one break.
I'll just follow suit and head on out.
He can't come in for one break. To get back on track though, because nobody cares about movies. So I got this tweet from Ground Trader who says, "Apologize to Korkmaz tonight.
Absolutely,
I'm listening
not.
And waiting to hear an apology from Korkmaz." I love the fans of Philly. I do. All right, I'm one of them. Hell, sit here. Wearing a Sixers shirt. Right? I got season tickets. Love my squads. This crap drives me nuts. It's been 2 games! 2! It hasn't been a week. It hasn't been a month of Furkan Korkmaz going off. It's literally been 2 games. By the way, at home, where they dominate. At home, where every one of their players, no matter who it is, turns into the 95 Bulls and the 96 Bulls. This is ridiculous. I'm supposed to apologize to Frank. How about you this? I will apologize to Korkmaz if he is still dropping the occasional 30 points here and there a month from now. I will apologize to Korkmaz if he's averaging more than 9 points a game. That's when I'll apologize to Furkan Korkmaz. Until then, I will continue to remind you that this organization didn't think much of Korkmaz because they let him walk. They literally said, "Furkan, we're not opting into your contract. We're not. We just go test the waters."
And you know what he found?
And nobody wanted him.
You know what he found when he went to test the waters? Back to Turkey.
Yep.
No other NBA team wanted him. And the Sixers got him on a great deal. And listen, he is outproducing his contract. There is no doubt about it.
Oh, yeah,
that.
He's going to make
and
some money.
You and I sat here. I sat here in the first segment of our show and talked about Furkan Korkmaz is exactly what Furkan Korkmaz is supposed to be.
His last 10 games, he's averaging 12.7 points a game.
Temperance.
12.7. By the way, 12.7, when you factor in the last 2 games where he's put up 30-plus.
65 points in 2 games.
So stop with this crap of I have to apologize to Furkan because he put up 30. Thank you very much for the game. I appreciate it.
Temperance.
Okay?
Okay, I appreciate the last game. I appreciate this game. No question about it. The Sixers do not win the last two games without Furkan Korkmaz. But to act like we do this all the time in this city. We did it with Boston Scott, for Christ's sake. We were ready to start erecting statues of Boston Scott as if he's the greatest running back of all time. We do this all the time in this city where we get a flash in the pan guy who produces for one and two nights, and all of a sudden, anybody who doubted him has to apologize. Get the hell out of here. 12.7 points a game the last 10 games, and that includes two games where he hit 30-plus. So you take those out, what the hell's he averaging? Now, I'm not a mathematician, but it's not anything to be so apologizing for.
You're saying 12.7 over the last 10
last
games.
Last 10 games.
All right, you talk, I'll do math. We're going to figure out that number.
I mean, this is ridiculous. Look, I mean, Furkan Korkmaz, if he can be a nice bench piece to add in 10 to 12 minutes a game and give you, you know, double digits around there, that's fine. The problem that I have with Furkan Korkmaz is when you look at the minutes he's played, 32 tonight, fine, he's dialed in, no complaints. 29 the previous game, look, he was dialed in, 34 points, no complaints. 28 points against Milwaukee, 28 minutes against Milwaukee, 16 minutes against Miami, 25 minutes against Boston, 21 minutes against Atlanta where he scored 0 points. Am I still apologizing for him? This is ridiculous.
You want the number?
Yeah.
So it's eight games, right? Dating back to Monday, January 20th when they played the Brooklyn Nets. Eight games, 76 points. You know what that comes out to?
I'm not
9.5 points per game. You know what he's averaging for the season?
9.3.
9.3.
And 9.3 is after the last two games where he put up 30-plus. So, look, the reality is, Furkan Korkmaz has gotten his time. He has gotten 20-plus minutes most games
this season.
He's
exactly what he's supposed to be.
Yeah, but I don't... Here's my problem with it. I don't need 20 minutes of Furkan is my issue. 20-plus minutes of Furkan.
Well, any bench player that's the 7 is going to get 20 minutes.
But he shouldn't be the 7 is my point. He should be the second guy off the bench. Because at this point, Alec Burks should be... I'm sorry. Then who am I thinking of?
So you want Mike Scott and Burks at Exuma ahead of them, right?
No.
So you want Robinson and Burks ahead of them.
Yeah, this bench is so bad. Yeah,
the bench is not
Robinson,
good.
Robinson, Burks, then Furkan, then Mike. But I mean, Furkan and Mike don't play the same position. So
you've got Furkan as the eight, the third guy off the bench. If he gives you 20 minutes a night, I don't think that's too much. I really don't.
He's averaging 21 minutes a night. I mean, I want Alec Burks averaging 21 minutes a night, who, by the way, did not play tonight for no good reason.
Well, and that's the problem. Again, I used that word temperance a moment ago talking about Furkan
Korkmaz. Like, Howell Meadows shouldn't see the court.
I don't know what kind of tempered expectations we're supposed to have about Alec Burks, because he was averaging 16, 17 points a night for a bad Golden State team, which, by the way, had all their players. If all their players had remained healthy, we talked about this last time, they've lost the most man minutes to injury this season. If all their players remained healthy, how many minutes and how many points per night is Alec Burks producing?
Oh, I mean,
half of that?
Yeah,
a
probably.
Quarter?
But when you look at this, I'm not worried about the Golden State Warriors, because right now I'm worried about the Sixers, and their bench is bad. You made these two moves to strengthen the bench with Glenn Robinson III, who's ironically a process guy, and Alec Burks, and the fact that you decided tonight, we'll rest him. Like, Alec Burks should not have rested at all. Shake Milton.
I don't know if it was resting. I really don't. I don't know what it is.
Whatever it was, he didn't play, and it's absurd. And it goes back to, you know, my problem with Brett in these rotations. But when you look at who got the most minutes, obviously Furkan got 32 minutes because he was dialed in. But when I'm looking at it, Burks and Glenn Robinson III should be the first two off the bench, right off the bat. Mike Scott has had a horrendous year. By the way, 18 minutes tonight, 2 points. He's been bad. At this point, the Hive can't even defend him.
There's
really
no
bad
defense at this point.
All right, so Josh Richardson comes off the bench tonight. Matisse comes off the bench. I don't need 20-plus minutes of Furkan, because he's not a 20-plus minute off-the-bench guy. He was a situation kind of like what you talked about with Alec Burks, where when if everybody's healthy, Furkan was the best of a bad situation. You look down the bench and you're going, okay, I'm not putting Howell Neto in. I'm not putting Shake Milton in. All right, Furkan, get out there. You're all I got. But now they've strengthened that position, and they've gotten Alec Burks, and they've gotten Glenn Robinson III. And Furkan should not be demanded to go out there and play 20 minutes. He should be playing 10 minutes and really should be possibly a three-point shooter off the bench if you can't grab one in the veteran buyout period, and that's it. Because when I look at this team, I mean, to depend on 20 plus minutes of Furkan, it's
Pat, we,
you're not gonna win that.
We talked about that veteran buyout period. I have no hope.
I think they strike out
that they get anything of substance.
I agree.
Deion Waiters was released today. People are talking about him. I don't want anything to do with Deion Waiters. Deion Waiters is a ticking time bomb in locker rooms.
I'm cool with D. Waiters.
I don't need Kyrie Irving light. Yeah, and what I mean by that is you get Kyrie Irving's mentality with a third of Kyrie Irving's skill.
Yeah, give me that.
I don't need it.
Give me that. Give me D. Waiters. Phone home, D. Waiters. Come on back. At this point, they need something to get them a jump start. I hear what you're saying, by the way. I completely. And if this season had gone the way that it was expected, I would not be sitting here saying bring D. Waiters back home. I'd be sitting here saying the exact same thing that you said. I said the same thing about Kyrie when he was a free agent. But this season hasn't gone as expected. And he is a bucket. And it's something they need. And, maybe getting bought out could humble him a bit. I don't know. But we'll talk about it more coming up, this veteran buyout period, because I tend to agree. But the Sixers did make a trade. Alec Burks, Glenn Robinson III. You saw Glenn Robinson III tonight. And he played pretty well. He played in about 12 minutes. He had 10 points. So he showed you a little bit there, and he was 5 of 6 from the field. He was good. And my issue, though, is you didn't see Alec Burks. But there's strength in the bench. There's still room to grow. They still have Kyle O'Quinn out there who's not going to play another game for this team. You figure he'll be bought out if they can secure a veteran buyout. But how are you feeling about this team? I mean, we've circled these dates on the calendar, Tyler, about timelines for this team, right?
Oh, you mean Christmas?
Christmas was one. Then 6 days later, the new year was another one.
Let me ask you something.
And then it was the trade deadline, and after that, it was like a week or two later because of the veteran buyout period. And we're reaching those timelines. We're reaching those moments, and we're reaching the final one where you're going to have to go and say, okay, this is the roster. Can they win? So I'll ask you out there, if this is it, can they win? 610-632-0975. It's Pat Egan, Tyler Zuli in the post on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.